Square One. A new documentary was released recently to see another side of the case against legendary musician Michael Jackson. We get to hear from people that supported Michael through firsthand accounts and that was part of the legal team that tried to prosecute him and saw what went on behind the scenes. We have Geraldine Hughes and Dr. Sherilyn Lee in studio. This is Truth Be Told. I'm Tony Sweet with Captain Ron, and welcome to Truth Be Told. All right, we are live in studio. Captain Ron's here.
Lee is blending into the background over there, Dr. Lee. I can hardly see her.
She's hiding over there. Hey, Dr. Lee. No, Dr. Lee will be here shortly. You know L.A. traffic. So, and we have Geraldine Hughes, who is the author of the book Redemption. And we're going to be diving into this. We did a show in, I think, February.
Yes.
Right before the documentary came out. I can't remember the name of the documentary on HBO.
Leaving Neverland.
And that was a huge controversy, and it opened a lot of doors of like wounds. And we're so happy to have you back, because now a new documentary, Square One.
Right.
And we're going to talk about your book. Michael Jackson was, you know, again, one of the biggest ever of all time in America and the world. And his life, it should have been, you know, I wish it was one of those things that we could have just remembering for the amazing music he put out, the performances he did. But unfortunately, throughout his career, in the last 20 years of his career, there was so many allegations about him. And even before that, of, you know, being odd and whatever, but also allegations of child molestation. And so, Geraldine, you worked for the prosecution in the 1993 case. And
this is the first thing against Michael, the first claim against him for any sort of allegation like this was Jordan Chandler.
Right.
And so tell us real quick about the when you because you believe Michael Jackson did not do this.
Absolutely.
Could you tell us when you first started noticing being part of that, because you were a secretary, I believe, right?
Right, a legal secretary. I was the legal secretary to Barry Rothman.
There you go.
Who was the attorney for Evan Chandler, the father of the first accuser, which was Jordy Chandler. And so my perspective was from the inside of the accuser's camp. I was actually, I didn't even really know at first what was really going on. I just know Michael Jackson's name popped up in my law office. And usually attorneys, when they're working for a major client, you know, they usually give us heads up. And no one gave me heads up. I had to find out. I had to actually ask behind the scenes, ask one of the other attorneys. Lady attorneys, I said, is this the Michael Jackson? I was typing.
Well, it's true. There's a lot of Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, any questions I had moving forward, you know, I was able to go to her and she was able. But it was just unusual that my attorney was not allowing me to know what was really going on other than documents that I typed, documents I saw come across the fax machine. Anthony Pelicana came to our office several times to negotiate with Rothman. I remember him storming out of the office saying that's extortion. His last visit, he said, shoot your best shot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And so here's my take on it is you know, we always say lawyers, oh my God, they're evil and this. And it is hard to understand how a lawyer can, when they know the truth,
right,
can take a case and push to convince the jury or judge or whatever it is that it's wrong,
right,
especially when it is wrong in the first place of what they did to Michael Jackson.
Right.
So how much longer after you the case was over that you started speaking out against that? Because I know you couldn't do it while you were in working for the.
I did it while I was
working.
Oh,
really?
My first time speaking out was we made my mom contacted Anthony Pelicana because she knew who all the players were. And I was actually working with Rothman when I had my first meeting where I went to speak to him about, because, you know, it's different. And I'm glad that you made that point. Attorneys do take cases that it's, you know, they're like, you know, they're hired hands.
Right.
And so they do have to, everybody needs representation, the guilty and the innocent.
Right.
But it's what's unusual is for an attorney to mastermind a plot, a plan. Evan Chandler released a tape recorded conversation was released where Chandler was telling David Swartz, who's the stepdaddy, he said, I've hired someone. He's mean. He's devious. He can't wait to destroy everybody. Mm. Now, that is not a normal description of an ethical attorney, but that is a description of an attorney that has an agenda that's not ethical. We had a case in our office where a lady was trying to get custody of her two children. And I'm following, I'm doing all the correspondence. And then all of a sudden I looked up and they claimed the father was a child molester. Mm. And she got full custody of her, both her children. That case was before Chandler came knocking on his door.
Wow. Wow. So, so how long was that case? Because I think it lasted quite a while, didn't it?
No, it didn't. It really only lasted. They were negotiating behind the scenes for a movie deal. He did not.
Yeah, this is all so weird. It's like that's not how you negotiate for one of these things. You would be concerned about your child, right. It would seem.
Right. Well, there was proof that he was not concerned about his child. The mother was on him about spending more time. He didn't start caring about spending time with his child until he found out his child was hanging out with Michael Jackson. But it wasn't just the child. It was the whole family. Michael was lavishing the whole family. And the fans even had a suspicion. June was she's a beautiful lady. Everybody kind of had a suspicion that Michael really liked June. You know, the whole family was spending time. Michael was taking the whole family to travel with him. And different places. You know, he lavishes people.
Well, can I jump right to a very, very hard point here? If Michael has obviously unlimited resources, and the case only lasted a little while because he paid $20 million to end this case, they settled, correct?
Only the civil case.
The civil case.
The criminal case, they never indicted Michael in 93 because the prosecutor could not find anything to corroborate with the boy's story.
Well, as somebody that knows nothing about pretty much anything, why would somebody pay $20 million? You think he'd have the resources, take $10 million of that to prove yourself and win.
Right.
Why wouldn't he use those resources that instead of paying this off? That doesn't seem to make sense to me.
I've watched many interviews,
sure.
And that was one of the biggest questions. Why would he
Why
do
did
that?
He settle? Well, on the inside, I saw four different motions. And motions are attorneys trying to sway the case, trying to rush ahead. Evan Chandler, a civil case is not supposed to precede a criminal investigation. Because
right.
The civil case.
And that changed since this case.
It was actually then. It was unconstitutional. It was part of our Constitution that you cannot, that you can't, if it's for the same issue that the civil case. Now, they've changed some laws since then. What they changed was he did say the young boy, as a result of the settlement, that he wasn't going to testify. But that wasn't the reason why the criminal case never went forward. The criminal case never went forward because he could not. They did a body search of Michael Jackson. Mm. The boy had given a description, and everybody is trying to say that it matched. If it had matched, that would have been corroborating evidence. But the fact that they didn't move forward even after the body search, that goes to show that it didn't match.
All more to my point, why wouldn't Michael use his unlimited resources to prove this and end this? It's like we talk about on here, you don't drive down the 405 with 30 cops behind you if you didn't do anything wrong. Why would you give someone $20 million just because they made these outrageous claims that Michael Jackson has the resources to prove?
Was that just
right. Not true?
Bad advice?
No, it wasn't. His attorneys gave him good advice. The judge was not ruling in his favor. They won two motions that they shouldn't have won. And so when a good attorney, when they see that the judge is not ruling in our favor, we should have won these motions. And when they saw that the judge had allowed the civil case, they knew he wasn't going to Farewell constitutionally, you know, based on his constitutional right. So his attorneys, he had the greatest attorneys, and their advice was that maybe he should settle. And another reason why you settle, settling is our preferred way of resolving a lawsuit anyway. $20 million is nothing for Michael to have paid, but Michael did not pay it. Michael Jackson's insurance paid that settlement. Not a dime of that money came out of Michael's pocket. So why not settle it? You see the judge is not in your favor. You see the motions.
To clear your name. Why would you? Because settle out of court usually means, well, I just did it. Let's make it go away. That's the perception people take.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not. It's also the public because it is one of, I mean, I guess I've never been in that situation. So I guess it would make sense for Michael Jackson just so, you know, just give him the money to let it go away. But it also, to me, it opens the doors for somebody else to do it.
Well, he could have paid the money. The father was asking for $20 million
all along,
a month prior to it coming to anybody's attention. He was negotiating. So if Michael wanted it to just go away, all he had to do was give the father what he wanted, the $20 million. But Michael said,
Or prove himself innocent of all of this.
He didn't have to. They said that Michael actually felt that all the good that he was doing, all that he's, you know, you only have, a pedophile doesn't strike once in a lifetime. Michael really did believe that the judicial system was going to do its thing. And it really did. The fact that they never charged him criminally in 93, The 2003, that was a mad prosecutor that just didn't make it happen the first time, and just he found the most bozo case that he could find and came and arrested him and just to humiliate him, and that's it. But that trial almost killed, it probably did kill Michael Jackson. When you know you're innocent and you know you've done nothing wrong to hurt, you look at it from an innocent person's standpoint of view.
I would spend everything I have.
Somebody that you helped save this boy's life. He had cancer, and now you stepped in to save his life, and now you're sitting there looking at him and his mom that you lavished and changed their whole life. You got to look at it from an innocent man's point of view. It's hard to, I can't even imagine what Michael went through psychologically, mentally, emotionally, and just, and financially it was costing him. I can't even imagine. I believe it did cost him his life. It wasn't meant for him to go through it in 93 because he almost didn't make it past it in 2003.
Do you think after the 93, I mean, why do you think Michael continued the same routine? Meaning like, because for me, once somebody did me wrong once, I'm like, all right, doors closed, bank closed. Why do you think he continued to bring children to Neverland and bring children around him when what he was accused of, and, you know, majority of the people believe that he didn't do it, but there's still a lot of people that believe that he did it.
Michael felt that that was his mission in life. He really felt, if you ever really look at the public speeches that he made, he's quoting scripture. You know, for you to quote scripture, you got to know what the scripture says in order to quote it. And he really did believe that he was doing that. That was his mission. I remember he had a manager, and I think this was written in his book. A lot of the kids that were coming to Neverland were dying kids. You know, were kids that were on there. They had to wheel them in on beds. Wow. And the manager just saw Michael just embrace them with love. Remember the guy named Ryan, the young boy that had AIDS that died?
Right.
He friended that guy. And then the guy died. Michael was so sad with it. But his manager asked him, he said, Michael, how can you do this? And Michael just looked at him with a big smile. And he said, that's what I was created to do. So do you let people who, money-grubbing people who have evil intentions, do you really let them stop your mission in life?
No, but listen, I think Tony's point is that if you've already gotten in trouble for this accusation, why would you publicly say, we've heard him in interviews say, well, I had 9-year-old kids stay over my house or whatever. That's an odd thing for a grown man to do Why would somebody that's already had accusations against him continue to do that? You think that would be a
since
93,
there is not one child that slept in Michael's bed since 93.
So that's just hearsay.
Yes. Even the 2003 accuser didn't sleep in his bed. They came back when by the time the prosecutor got to the mother, after they saw the interview, the Bashir interview, got to the mom, they found out they hadn't slept. So they went back to the ranch. And their number one question was, Michael, we want to sleep in your bed. Can we? Michael had, the house manager. Crisco. Oh, I can't remember his name. Forgive me, y'all. But he had a house manager at the time whose job was when children were present that he was to supervise. And so when they came back and said, Michael, we want to sleep in you, he said, well, I don't know, you know. And the guy, he said it in square one. He said that the solution that Michael came up with, you can sleep in the bed. Me and my manager, we're going to sleep on the floor. They never slept in the bed with Michael, the second accuser.
Even that's just more odd, I would think, don't you think?
I don't know about odd. I mean,
you have kids sleeping in your bed and you're going to sleep on the floor.
My thing
another
is,
guy.
I've only child that's ever slept in my bed was my nephew, and it drove me crazy because he kicked and all that stuff. But
that's me too,
right? But to have, I mean, to
everyone was probably the size of a block,
right?
That's a little different,
right? So, I mean, I'm because we're not trying to say he is, because I honestly believe. He didn't, but I believe there was something different, special, and also different about Michael Jackson.
Right.
How do you try to defend to a lot of people that, I mean, because most people in the chat room are very supportive.
Right.
But what about those people that, you know, conspiracies and to, you know, say, oh, no, he did. Or even people come out again. Corey Feldman. He was always very supportive of Michael.
Right.
But then. When the last movie came out, he was kind of like, he kind of got wishy-washy.
Well, he's, you know, he was very, I love the point that he made in the Square One documentary.
Right.
He said he was trying to bring some child molesters to the attention of the
because
authorities.
Because he lived it, yeah.
And they were trying to implement Michael. And he said, Michael did nothing. Now, you can't take that back.
Right.
Well, I take that back. what Robson and Chuck, they took
yes,
it back.
Yes, they did.
But you look at his track record. You look at his track record. And then you look at the track record of a pedophile. By the time a person who is a pedophile is identified, there's usually hundreds of victims in their path. Michael, the 93 was the first allegation of anyone making that accusation against him. And out of all the accusers that tried to come against Michael, none of them wanted justice. They all just want, there's no way in God's green earth you hurt my child, and I'm not going to go after justice. I'm only going to go after a movie deal.
Well, you were involved only on the first Jordan one, the Jordan Chandler case. That's
right.
The first one that started all this. These other ones we're talking about, Finding Neverland, was later.
Later, yeah.
And obviously you have no connection directly to those cases.
Not directly, no.
Right. Okay.
But I have a direct connection to the false allegation. And
of the Jordan Clarkson
of
one.
The Jordan case.
Right.
And Leaving Neverland tried to implement Jordy Chandler. He tried to say, Robson tried to say, by the time Jordy came along, I was a little older, and Michael, you know, he usually pushed you to the side. But he failed to mention that when he mentioned in the documentary that Safechuck mentioned in the documentary that Michael molested him over 100 times in the train station. The engineer of that train station showed the blueprint of the train station was not until, I think it was 92 when they last was at Neverland, wasn't even made until 93, and it took 2 years to build. So two lies that he told. Number one, the train station wasn't even made at the time. And the other lie is, Michael, when you get a little older, Michael kind of pushed, when the train station was built, he was 17 years old. Mm. So that's two lies in one documentary.
And what do you think about the allegations from, because when you hear it from children that are not family, but LaToya Jackson came out and blasted Michael,
right,
saying he was guilty. I mean, this is his sister. Why do you think that happened? And do you think it was just her husband? Because, I mean, she was pretty close, I believe, to Michael.
The one that was really close to Michael was Janet.
Yeah, because they were both really the younger. Close.
But LaToya did come back and recant, and she said it was
the
husband.
Time,
yeah, it was.
But
the
see,
husband.
There's another person that went back.
Yeah,
so.
it was the husband, and she was real. And there were witnesses that they brought forth, even in Danny Wu's Square One, that said.
Yeah, in the doc, they say he was feeding her lines in the. In the earpiece.
Even the commentator was saying that the guy that was he said he could hear something someone in the background.
But she was like saying what he was telling her to say. Supposedly.
Yeah, it's just for the community, the world audience that hears that from his sister. That's where I think a lot of people. Why would somebody say that is his sister? Because the Jackson family seemed to, I mean, at the time, at least seemed to always be very, very close.
And she did recant.
Yeah, she did recant.
She didn't have to, but she did. And so we're real thankful. But you just got to understand, Michael Jackson had access to millions of children. He had them coming and going. And a lot of people say a lot of the kids, when they would come to the ranch, he wasn't even there. And a lot of them were family children. And you just got to know that the access that he had to children. I love children, undyingly love children. And I remember working with kids that lived, underprivileged kids that lived in Watts. I would bring them to my home because they didn't, they never had a chance to just be happy without having to worry about what they're going to eat. And, and so I would bring them to my home. And I promise you, the boys, I knew I couldn't bring them both. So the boys would come one week, and the girl, when the boys would come, they'd set up in the living room. They just walk in and take over my living room. When the girls would come, they would go straight up the stairs to my bedroom. I would go up to my bedroom. I'd be like, can I come in here? Can you guys? That's the nature of a child. Right. That's not the nature of somebody trying to hurt a child.
Right. And I think another big question is not only why did he give the money and did it, but the actual parents that allowed, children. I don't know, at the time, maybe Michael let people sleep over, but why would even parents allow children to be?
He was lavishing everybody.
So maybe it was just all money.
It was the parents were the ones that.
Well, that is another odd aspect, though.
Yeah,
he was lavishing everyone.
Only way he had, because it wasn't like he went and had the car pick them up. They would come to the house.
And the parents were there at the house.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
He wasn't just separated. When Michael traveled with Jordy Chandler, the whole family was with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, when you wrote Redemption, what was your goal? Was it just to help those people out there that maybe were teetering or believe that Michael did do this? Was that your goal? To
my reason for when Michael made the decision to settle the case, and it was the best decision under great advice, and like I said, not a dime came out of his pocket. I knew I had information that no one knew. I knew I had the real story, which was the extortion, that it was an elaborate extortion scheme that launched the false allegation. And I just, for the life of me, I didn't know what to do with that information. A few years went by, and the book idea did come to me later. It didn't come to me initially, but when it did come to me, I said, okay, I could do this. I said, but I got to get the truth out. If somebody ever wronged you in a bad way, it's not right. And it's never true justice until the truth is told.
True.
That's why the name of this show is called Truth Be Told, because the truth needs to be told,
right.
Especially if you're innocent. And I just looked at writing the book as a way of getting the truth out. I said, I could do that. I don't know, media attention. I didn't want no, because I had been through the media frenzy. And if you've ever gone through that, you don't want that again. They were camped out, hiding out, calling my, oh my God, it was crazy. But I just thought that was a mutual way of getting the truth out, where I could at least say what I had to say, get it out, and then you believe it or not. It's up to you.
I get that. That's what I would do. Just put it down, and now it's all down. They won't have to keep hounding you for you and misquoting you and misspeaking you. A lot of the abduction cases, people do that, UFO abduction cases, that kind of thing. They want to just do it so they can put their words
right.
down. Because you saw that you felt like this was a contrived
I know it was.
Attack, right?
It was. Because one thing was going on in the public's eye, and I was watching something totally different inside my attorney. I even, when the case finally hit, Evan Chandler and Jordy, everybody was looking for him. The news was all over the place. So they came and hung out at my attorney's office for about 3 days. They literally camped out. And I heard Evan blurt out in the conference room, he said, "It's my ass that's in danger of going to prison." And I was like, "Really?" Really?
That's an odd thing to say for someone whose child is.
Right, right.
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Well,
sorry, yeah.
Well, at least you got prepared here on The Truth Be Told. Half our guests don't show up. The other one's on the phone the whole time. Tony and I are just chatting. Awesome.
But the truth be told.
Well,
Ron, remember the point we were making before we went on air about when she wrote the book? What would she say? Nobody sued you.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And that is.
When I made the decision to write the book, I had my, because like I said, I was one of the employees for the attorney, but I did a lot of research, and one of the things that I came across was the attorney-client privilege is the thing that forbids you from saying anything. But there was also a code that said, but if the attorney was hired for reasons that were unethical, then the attorney-client privilege rule doesn't apply. Right. So my contention was he was hired to commit a crime. Extortion is a crime. And he admitted that out of his mouth, he admitted that's why he hired the attorney. So.
But you've been working for that attorney for a long time.
No.
Oh, you hadn't?
No. Okay. No one works for Barry Rothman for a long time. You're lucky if you.
There you go.
You were there. I was there like right when it started, and all the way until the settlement.
What a stroke of luck that is! She gets there, and this big right. case comes through. What an interesting thing. So that is a compelling thing that they didn't come after you for putting this out. That's interesting.
Not one cease or desist letter.
That
Not
is
one.
Very interesting. Another thing that I think is, I'll put it in the interesting category. I find it, I'll just say interesting, that the father, Evan Chandler, the guy that put this whole thing together and seems to have come up with this scheme from your perspective, that after Michael Jackson did die, 3 months later killed himself.
Right.
That's an interesting piece of information
allegedly.
Right there. Well, and or
well, no,
a conspiracy
it was allegedly
show.
That it was suicide. That's the alleged part. He did kill himself. That's, but.
Well, I mean, he definitely died, right? I mean,
oh,
that's,
yes.
And then, there's some smoke there, too, that perhaps he was.
I think for the conspiracy theorist, one would assume that if anybody would go after him, it would have been the tempers were flaring when Michael died, still flaring 10 years later.
Sure.
Still flaring 10 years later.
And Jordan's nowhere to be found, right? The child.
Right. And,
he's
obviously
grown now.
And he never did, like you said, it's hard to find him for even interviews or anything.
He refused to be interviewed. And the young lady, her name was Josephine Zoni. I hope I'm saying your name right. That was in the Square One documentary. She came forward and said that during that 2003 trial, Jordy Chandler was telling her, as well as others, they had other people on the trial, the list for the trial, witness list. She said that he was telling everybody that Michael did nothing, that he still loved Michael, was still playing his music, and he...
Wouldn't it be a term of his settlement to get $20 million not to talk about this?
That's a good question. That's a good question. But he could come forward and tell the truth.
True. Well, it's interesting. And you think that when the documentary Finding Neverland came out and got all the publicity with the HBO show and everything, that maybe that would have been an opportunity for him to come forward on either side of this.
Well, they were trying to, from what I understand, they were trying to subpoena. They were trying to get him to come forward then. That's when I was told he left the country. He's like, "I'm not coming forward." He hasn't made, that allegation has not been made by Jordy Chandler since 1993 when he was under the manipulation of his father and my attorney.
What happened to June?
To June? He came, June did come to trial. She was one of the witnesses, and she said that She hadn't had any contact with her son for like the past 11 years. Wow. In that same year, Evan Chandler.
That's strange.
In that same year, Jordy Chandler filed a restraining order against his father for they had an altercation and he attacked him physically. And we think that, I think, I'm going to just throw my thoughts out there, that Evan knew he was close, that he was telling people. And Evan had a real bad, was very violent, you know. And so.
Yeah, he hit him with like a weights or something, right?
Yeah,
like,
hit him with a weight and he on his head even. Yeah. So he got a restraining order. And I just believe that it was because he found out that Jordy was telling people the truth.
Now, the money itself, because like even a lot of young actors, when they make a lot of money, like Macaulay Culkin, right. That went into a trust fund for when he hit a certain age. Did the father have access to that $20 million, or did that go into a trust fund?
One of the terms of the settlement, and this is something that Evan Chandler did not, he didn't think in a million years it would actually come down like this. His whole reason for doing this whole plot was to get money so he could make a movie. $20 million so he can make a movie. So when the settlement, when they finally decide to settle, and like I said, Michael didn't pay a dime of that money, the executor of Jordy Chandler's estate.
That was smart.
Yes.
Because did he see that?
So the money went to just the kid, not to the father.
It went just to the kid. They got money for attorney's fees. Yeah, they got money to pay their attorney's fees, but that money never was able to be dropped into his hands.
Oh, Daddy
ever.
Didn't like that, I'm sure.
No. And he wasn't able to make the movie. And I was told also, I was reading some stories that he had at least 7 plastic surgeries trying to disguise.
Evan did?
Oh, yeah. 7 plastic surgery.
Wow.
The picture, the latest picture that I saw
father,
of Evan
yeah.
Chandler, that didn't look like the man that came into my attorney's office. It didn't look like him at all. Yeah, that doesn't look like him right there.
Wow.
If you see an older picture, he looks a little different. But
what's funny is he almost looks like Michael Jackson. Almost looks like my kids with the hair and the hat or the sunglasses. That's funny.
Now, so that's this case. And then at least 5 public allegations about this, right, against Michael.
Jordy Chandler, Alviso, and the 2, so 4. I don't know where the 5th one, I've heard that
I think
count.
In the documentary they said there's 5 public.
I don't know who
public,
the 5th one.
I don't know who
That's what I said. It's one of those things when Pandora's box was open, it almost like, well, they got $20 million, so why?
Right.
And they
so
settled.
Is that what your feelings are, that these are
just hungry,
trumped up?
Parents.
Oh, absolutely. Michael Jackson was not a child molester. He loved children. He was very spiritual. He came up a Jehovah's Witness. And they sit down and study the Bible every day.
Have you ever met Michael even?
I didn't get a chance to meet him. This is the reason why. When we put out the press release regarding the release of my book, it was in the same month. I didn't know they were coming, that Tom Stanton was coming against Michael the second time. I'm trying to tell the first story. I didn't know there was another story getting ready to happen. But at the same time, they didn't know my book was coming out. So we both hit in the same month that he was now under investigation. Mm. So when we tried to contact him, I had to contact him to use this picture. I got the permission to use it from him, but it came through Joe Jackson. When I finally met Joe Jackson, I asked him, I said, how did I get? He said, he just simply called Michael. He said, the lady that's trying to put the book out, and he said, of course. But he couldn't really work with me. He couldn't because he was under the investigation.
Right.
And he didn't want to, make it seem like he had anything. And he didn't have anything to do with the book. This is my account. This
right.
is my story.
Right.
So. He did give me advice. You know, he told me through his publicist, Ramon was his publicist, and I was told that Michael said just, seek the assistance of political people and of movie, stars to help me. But she said, if you can imagine how hard, how they're trying to bury your book, just imagine how he feels right now.
I'm wondering if there's these other 4 people. I wonder if there's a, a Geraldine Hughes that worked for those other 4 people. attorneys. You know what I mean? Have you ever found that out? Is there
other
people that say that those are trumped up charges?
I think Danny Wu is one.
Did he work for one of the other four accusers?
He didn't work for him, but see, what I'm saying here is that Michael is innocent. Michael did a lot of good. Michael wasn't hurting anyone.
I know, but I'm trying to try to be fair and level about this. Is that you really, it's hard to talk about the other four cases with you and all of Michael's greatness or whatever, because what your insight is, you know firsthand, you overheard things talked about the first case. I'm curious if there are other people that have that sort of inside knowledge on the other four cases.
Prosecutors in the last case.
If they could all corroborate, that would really strengthen this argument, and you could really put forth something.
Since the Leaving Neverland documentary aired, a lot of people have come forward. A lot of people who worked with Michael, a lot of kids who were right there with Michael, a lot of people have come forward, and they have said never have they ever. Lisa Marie Presley came forward. She said, I wouldn't have been with anyone who could harm a child. A lot of people have come forward. The only news that gets reported, though, is the ones that are coming forward with the lie.
Of course.
Not the ones that are coming with the truth. The ones they're barely mentioning the Square One documentary is the rebuttal to Leaving Neverland. How come it's not getting the same press as Leaving Neverland?
Well, I always said, I mean, when Oprah put out OWN, it started tanking because it was all good stuff. Nobody always wants to hear good stuff, but when you add drama and you add, you know,
lies,
I mean, that's why do you think all the news outlets are doing the best ratings right now? Because of impeachment talk. I mean, so it's, I think people just for some reason were attracted to, in even our show, it's like we talk about controversial conspiracies, paranormal, things that are not of norm. And I think that's why a lot of people don't talk about, like you said, the people that come out. We just,
yeah,
I don't know why, human nature.
When this story broke, when the story broke and they got a hold of the press release about my book, they were being fair back then. I was out there. I did every news. You know, while they were saying Michael was guilty, they at least allowed a platform of someone to say, and that's where I came in. There were about three of us that was out there that they actually allowed. I was on Geraldo on a panel with Lisa Bloomfield. And, you know, I was out there. I was 2020, took my best interview and never aired it.
Oh, wow.
They got a lot of information. But, it, you know, at least back then, they were allowing the other side. And all we're asking right now is that they do it now.
Right.
Give Michael Jackson an even platform for the truth now, because the lie has been out there. It hasn't been proven. The reason why the lie hasn't been proven, I mean, the molestation hasn't been proven, is because it's not true. The only thing we're asking is allow the truth to be told now.
Truth be told. So we agree with that. Well, that's our show. Thank you very much.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Hi, Dr. Lee.
We have another guest today, Dr. Lee, who do you have a little blurb?
Well, Dr. Lee, you were the nurse at the end of Michael Jackson's life, and actually you testified against Dr.
Conrad
Murray. Mm-hmm. I know Dr. Lee got to meet Michael Jackson, and you've testified or talked to us last time and verified that he was such a wonderful man, right?
Wonderful man, and there was just so many things told about him even then that wasn't true.
Right.
And and meeting him and being with him days and nights. So I'm an NP, nurse practitioner, and nutritionist. And so, and that's what my capacity with him. I was with him day and night. So for many, many days and nights.
I remember you saying he was just such a kind man, and you know, it's a sad way of him to go,
right?
And you know, to leave his legacy, and it is sad that, you know, like you said, this guy should be
celebrated.
You know, celebrated, but unfortunately, there's so many allegations and things for the last 25 years. When did he pass? 2009?
It's been 10 years.
Oh,
this year.
Gosh,
this year is 10 years.
So for like almost 20 years of being just accused, and even before that of, you know,
it's
the plastic.
Well, 93 was this one.
Right. So,
because even when he was accused then, and I know a couple of major television stations said, I had interviews with, and I told him, I said, you know, and then they wanted to edit. I said, if you're not going to do it the way I need to tell it, because it's the truth, then I'm not going to interview with you. And I know a lot of networks got very angry with me because I said, we want you to sit here. We want you to be here when this happened and that happened. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that because right is right. You know, and when a person who has done so much for mankind, right, and he's done so much that people didn't know. I mean, a lot of his insomnia problem, too, but when he couldn't sleep, he would be at hospitals, check at children's hospital, checking in other children to see who needed money for their child, for brain surgeries, and, you know, families that didn't have money for this and money for that to pay for it, you know, to be loving and help other people. Okay, we talked about so many things because I spent so many hours with him, and all he was concerned and caring about other people. I think it was very sad that for a person who've done so much and gave so much to society, he gave so much to other countries and nonprofit. What, $300 million, I think they said it was? It's quite a bit. That's a
and he's in the Guinea Book World Record for donations. For donations.
Yeah. Wow. And then this is how he's treated. I mean, nobody thinks of this gentleman has children. You know, and for you to put this out there, you know, it's no heart for this kids and his lies. Who cares about the feelings of a person's children? Right. I think that's so wrong. I think that's so wrong.
Yeah, like I said, it is sad. And what's weird is in within the 10 years, we lost so many of our legends. I mean, Michael, Prince, you know, Whitney. Right. And I just think it's sad that, you know, these legends, unfortunately, sometimes go out. And their legacy that we known them for is putting out amazing music and artistry. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from drugs and everything else. And do you think a lot of the insomnia was from the trials itself? Do you think that,
or is that
way before?
Actually, I was listening to an interview that his mother had given to someone, I won't mention name, but anyway. And she said he was been like that since a kid. But when you have certain medical conditions, it can lead to a person having problems with insomnia. So we know, everybody knew he had vitiligo, which is an autoimmune. And it was already told that in his report, you know, so I'm not reporting something that's new, of lupus. So these autoimmune disorders can cause you to have, it actually throws off your circadian rhythm. And so, you know, you have a problem with vitamin D absorption because you can't be out there because of the lupus.
Right.
And because I do extensive lab work on everyone. It's very important that I test, not guess. I test and assess. I like that. So that's really important for a person who come in contact with, whether it's an entertainer or not. But somebody like that, I mean, everybody, you want to know everything that's going on, you know, nutritionally and down to the micronutrition, which is very important to see what's missing. So we were doing like neurotransmitter testing. They found my kit actually in his house.
Really?
And I had already said it. Yeah, we were going to do that. He was like, I just don't have time to do all of that. You know, his whole thing was, I just need to go to sleep right away. And not everybody can take melatonin. I mean, he could not take it. And
was he allergic or just didn't work?
No, a lot of people take it and have nightmares.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. I have a daughter who takes it and she said the same thing. She said, Mom, I had these weird dreams. Can't take melatonin.
Yeah, I've had that experience before. But I take it a lot.
Yeah. You don't mind the dreams, huh? They're not too
weird. I've had some that are, you know, that were profound, but that's another show.
I
was going to say. my biggest thing with Michael, like I said, I loved his music. I loved about him that he did care about not just humanity, but the planet itself.
Yes, the planet. Yes.
The allegations that went were against him all those years. I just couldn't imagine, just owning a business or working, you know, being accused a little bit of something. It stresses you out beyond belief. Right. I couldn't imagine being the biggest artist in the world.
But he found a place within his own being. Because a couple of times I was watching the news prior to seeing him or saw something in the news. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to see him this evening. He's going to be depressed. And when I arrived there, he was happy and with the kids and outgoing. I'm like, he's not depressed. So I found out later, because his mindset is like was like this. I am going to be the eagle. He said, if I soar with the eagle, I don't have time for the little baby chicks chirping along, and that's gossip. And that's the stuff they're all chirping along, talking. He said, I don't have time for that.
I mean.
But if you look at the journey of an eagle, it's pretty powerful. If anybody go and look at the life journey of an eagle, it's very powerful.
It's too busy soaring.
Right, right.
Not just soaring, because you make choices.
Yeah.
The eagle, and after they live so long, and they their wings become dirty and heavy, and the talents become too, well, they can't feed themselves anymore. They have a choice. They go on the top of a mountain. You have a choice either to sit there and die or painfully pick off every feather and sit there until they come all back brand new.
I did not know that.
And then you travel away for the next 30 years. Hmm. It's beautiful.
I just look at
the journey of an eagle. It is so beautiful. It's unbelievable.
I mean,
that was what he said. His whole thing
because I know he was very smart too. Like
oh
a
my
very
goodness.
Intelligent
we
guy.
Talked about everything with medicine, history, politics. I mean, he was, and his children as well, extremely smart. You know.
Well, he had to have a thick skin because he started so young in the industry. I mean, so young. So I couldn't imagine him staying on top that long and not. And not
you
having
know, you
a thick
get
skin.
To a place where you know, and the one thing that he had said that out of all the things he had kind of gone through is that what grounded him was his children. Hmm. They grounded him.
He was you hear that a lot. I mean, a lot of people feel that that's what brings them back to. Mm-hmm.
Even people who, you know, have children later and things like that is that going on. But what grounded him with his children, and it was, you know, I've been to the homes of many, many people, but. That particular home had so much structure. Mm. You know, we eat dinner at 7 o'clock, and most people in the entertainment field, they are just so busy they don't have time to halfway be home. But when he's home, this is what we do: we have dinner at 7. We do this. You go to bed at 9 or 9:30. You know, it was structure, and it was a love. You would walk in and you felt the love with the children. You felt the love. You felt the love with him himself, and so it was. It was just very sad to see someone go through something like that.
Right.
And I think, you know, quite naturally, I am not trying to compare myself with Michael, but I know my entire childhood life, I was bullied all through my childhood because of eczema. Because at 7, they wanted to amputate my legs. So
oh, wow.
I had mud thrown on me and dirt and talked about all through elementary school. And so it was a very painful going through all of that. So at some point in time, you find a place where you can go within yourself to be happy. And then what makes you happy?
Yeah.
And so sometimes when you succeed and you grow past all of that, it's like, oh, okay, so life is not really that bad.
Right.
And even though you've had some really bad experiences. So the book was, I think, it was out there, written before I was born because... That's part of the book that I had written, and we discussed some things because I had been I've been in two comas and all kind of stuff. And this is why we discussed so many things as it related to life as well. Right. And he loved life, never depressed, never.
And I think that people need to understand, and I'll say it again, Michael Jackson was very spiritual. And when you're spiritual, you have another strength that you're drawing from. You're not just, if you're just drawing from your own strength, we all cave in when we just lean to our own strength. But he was very spiritual. So he had another strength that he was drawing from as well, too, that kept him afloat.
Well, I saw that. And, you know, everybody know me now. I'm a praying person. I mean, I have things and buttons I wear and very positive. Matter of fact, I gave it to Michael. I'm so grateful for my magnet for miracles. And he actually had it on his mirror.
Oh, wow.
And the second trial, they pulled it up during the second trial. I'm so grateful my magnet for miracles and showed it during the second trial.
Oh, I love it.
And I was wearing it. And they said, that's where he got it from. I said,
awesome. Well, unfortunately, we're actually have to close down because we have another show at 3. But we're going to have you guys back again. Dr. Lee has a show on my network, United Broadcasting
UBN
Network.
Yes, UBN Go. Yes, I'm
it's
here.
Called New Wellness, and every Wednesday, check her show out. Go to her YouTube channel. It's a great show, you know, for anything that you want to, you know, health-wise, mental, you know, because health affects mental and spiritual.
Yes.
And
So we covered yeah. it all. And yeah. we have covered it all. And yeah. I've been with
great
you for
guest.
Several years, and we yeah. have a great time. We have some surprises for you next month.
Oh, I love it.
You know, especially to the vegan world.
Oh, well, I like a little vegan once in a while.
Oh, yes.
you say once in a
while. Once in a while.
Vegetarian.
Right.
Yes.
Geraldine, so where do people find your book and find more information about you?
Redemption is available on Amazon.com. I'm working on Redemption 2. I'm updating it. And it will be available. You can find me on Facebook, Geraldine Hughes. And I keep the fans all over the world in the loop as to what's going on. We're working on the movie project
nice.
For Redemption. It's time for the movie. It's yes. time for you to see the truth like they told the lie. So I'm not stopping until the story is completely told. So,
well, yeah. Truth Be Told is very, very much here for you guys. And we want to
yes.
support
and
you.
And I'm so glad I met her. We met after, unfortunately.
Both lovely. Both lovely ladies. And as you can see, and as the last show we did, you know, people still, after 10 years, love Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Love Michael Jackson.
No doubt.
All right. Well, this is Truth Be Told. We love you guys for always tuning in and being a part of our show. You can subscribe to our channel. We'd love that. Share this episode with anybody and everybody you can think of. And we'd love to have your support. You can find us on iTunes, iHeart, and all that good stuff. And for Captain Ron and myself, I'm Tony Sweet, and you're listening to Truth Be Told with Dr. Sherilyn Lee and Geraldine Hughes. Till next time, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.